Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:12 PM, and that is Central Time. Today is August 31st. I thought we'd kick off with Tencent because the share rebounded pretty impressively in here today, and considering the tone of the news headlines that we've been having over the last few days, where Chinese kids are only going to be allowed to use online games for 3 hours a week. I think if I told my children that, particularly my eldest daughter, that she could only get online with her friends for 3 hours in a week, there'd be a mini revolution. But one would anticipate that that kind of news would have a deleterious effect on the share, but yet it was up. So I think this is starting to look like evidence that these companies have probably fallen about as much as they are going to. And when we then think about just how much they've already fallen, well, I think investors are starting to look on the tech sector in China as a value proposition. So it's looking increasingly likely that Tencent will be able to hold this 400 level. Then Alibaba has also been able to push on the upside in here today. So certainly starting to look like support here in the $150 area. Meituan was up something like 9% in here. So that's one of the less well-known companies. But the Hang Seng was also in positive territory today. Then the CSI 300 looks like it's starting to put in some support as well. So while we can think about the significant challenges that to the entire growth culture that are currently underway in China, it does also look like that there is some support starting to come through, and investors are beginning to think that with the outlook for growth in China starting to moderate, and the negative PMI figures that came out today as well, that they can't abide by this a completely nuanced approach, and that it's more than likely that they're going to have to take some of the pressure off in terms of liquidity. And of course, then there's also China Evergrande. So while there's been a lot of news headlines about the misadventures in the tech sector, well, China Evergrande is now about a third lower than it was at the beginning of August, and not a lot of evidence to suggest that there's going to be an imminent bailout, and the company is beginning to talk about defaulting. Well, it's the biggest issuer of US dollar denominated debt in the emerging markets, and it's a major player in the property market. So the big question is, what happens next, and is it going to have a knock-on effect for the wider high yield sector internationally? So US high yield spreads are now contracting. They got up to test the region of the trend mean, and they're pulling back again. And we've had a pretty strong rebound on Wall Street yesterday, but I'd like to just stay in Asia for the moment, because the Nikkei was also in positive territory in here today, and pushing back above that 28,000 level. The second section index has been up now on consecutive days, so also demonstrating support in the region of the trend mean, but I think more importantly than that, it looks like a consolidation in the region of the peak from early 2018. So this is really quite bullish action overall. And then India is trending in a manner that we haven't seen in well over a decade. It's quite overextended relative to the trend mean, and I think it's appropriate to look at it on a log scale now, and to get plenty of back history. So we can see that there have been occasions when it's been overextended in the past, and those have resulted in reversions towards the mean. Following the big breakout from an extraordinarily lengthy base formation in the early 2000s, Well, then the market really trended higher in a very persistent manner, and it m sustained a wide overextension relative to the 200, and sorry, this is a 200 week, so the 1,000 day moving average for a pretty substantial period. So we're really very overextended relative to the long-term trend right now. So the big dip that we had last year was a buying opportunity similar to what we had in 2008. We're unlikely to get back to that kind of undervaluation anytime soon. But the big question is, how long can this acceleration go on? And there's no sign of it ending just yet, and the rupee is really quite firm. So India is now the fastest growing economy in the world, and I think it's also important to look at the long-term trend of the currency, because the number of times when the Indian rupee has been able to trend higher for any kind of sustained period have generally been are coincided with periods of strength in the stock market, because international investors really do relish the opportunity to get capital market and currency market appreciation at the same time. So I think you can look back at 2002 through to 2007, and it was very jerky, but we did have a meaningful appreciation in the rupee, and we haven't had anything approaching that since around 2010. So if the rupee can push through the 1 point or 0.014 area, then that will break the downtrend, and it would certainly make India a more, I think, attractive market from the perspective of international investors. And then, of course, there is the additional point that we may be on the cusp now of a new credit cycle in India as well. And the banking sector continues to firm and was at a new recovery high as it comes back to test the peaks from back in February again. So I think this is a meaningful development, and it does point towards India being a leading contender to take over China's growth leadership mantle. We also had a pretty positive day in other Asian markets. So Indonesia is now firming from the region of the trend mean, and of course it's another high population market as well. And we've had the continued strength in regional currencies. So the Indonesian rupiah was also in positive territory. And of course, this strength that we're seeing coming through in Asian currencies is a direct response to the statements made by Jay Powell at Jackson Hole last week, which were to the effect that the USA isn't going to be in no hurry to raise interest rates. And that would be par for the course. When we think about the Federal Reserve and how willing they've been to raise interest rates in a hurry after a period of financial uncertainty, they've generally waited for a prolonged period. So after the global financial crisis, they didn't start raising rates again until the end of 2015. And after the bursting of the tech bubble and 9/11, they didn't raise rates again until 2004. So we're in an environment right now which is extremely liquidity rich, and it's likely to remain that way. And the stock market rallied in a really quite impressive manner yesterday, and we've had a bit of a pause in here today on Wall Street, but certainly nothing to be particularly alarmed about. So we're still in a benign environment overall. So gold prices should continue to do well in this environment where we're still in a very liquidity-rich environment, and there is a real chance of competitive currency devaluation. So Europe was starting to talk today about tapering, and they're not going to taper faster than anyone else. they certainly don't want a strong euro. So the euro has been steadying over the course of the last few days, but it wasn't able to hold its highs in here today. And I think it's a mistake to pay too much attention to the trends that we're getting between these major currencies, because it's likely to continue to be choppy. We can also then look at the dollar versus the yen, because it still has a sequence of higher reaction lows. This looks like a first step above the type 2 bottom. We had a massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend, and it was a modest downtrend, but it was certainly a downtrend. And now we've broken that downtrend from the peak in 2015, so it suggests that the yen will weaken further from here and the dollar will strengthen against it. Of course, the US doesn't want a stronger currency, but perhaps Japan is currently willing to do more to weaken its currency. So it's, I think, remains extremely likely that we're going to have competitive efforts to devalue the purchasing power of their respective currencies among the major economies. So gold should do better in that environment, and it is now beginning to establish itself above the $1,800 area. So it's not quite there yet in terms of clearly breaking out, but it's certainly looking more convincing by the day. And silver is also reasonably steady in here as well. So, and in this kind of environment, it's, I think, only a matter of time before silver moves back into a position of outperformance. Platinum prices had been pausing around the $1,000 area and are starting to push up and back through it right now. And palladium was also up in a dynamic manner over the last week, and a little softer in here today. The one industrial resource that stood out today was nickel, and nickel prices were up in a dynamic manner. There's been a lot of discussion and a lot of volatility in the nickel market because of China's ability to produce nickel from pig nickel. So it's obviously a rather different way of producing the metal, and it's rather resource intense and energy intense, and certainly not the cleanest way of getting the metal refined, but it does work. So that's contributed to a lot of volatility, and yet the price continues to steady and to push higher from here. And copper prices also remain really quite firm and continue to rebound from the region of the trend mean. So we're still in an environment which is benign for emerging markets and for industrial resources, because governments really don't have very much more in their playbook. They're going to spend on social programs, and they're going to support infrastructure development, because they can't really do much more to stimulate growth in a quick manner. Oil prices have been up and down a bit because of Hurricane Ida, but certainly holding the rebound. So we have clear evidence now of support being found in the region of the trend mean. It's an emphatic rebound from the region of the upper side of the underlying range, and, or I guess the middle really of that underlying range. And I think it's more likely than not that we're going to see prices push back up towards the upper side of this range that's been evolving now for most of the last 5 years, which is around the $80 area. There's a lot of to and fro going on in terms of the geopolitical environment. So obviously what's going on in Afghanistan doesn't really need to be commented on very much more, but they don't have any oil. But the USA is also reportedly removing its air defenses from many of the Gulf Cooperation Council states. So the exact reason for that redeployment is obviously open to question. There's nobody saying exactly what the reason for it is. It may just be further efforts to demilitarize the world, and just a further iteration of U.S. isolationism. or it might be something else. But the one thing that it will do is increase geopolitical tension, and that is potentially going to be bullish for the oil price. So there is a potential narrative for why oil prices should be steadying from here. And in Europe, natural gas prices are continuing to push on to new highs. So this is a significant re-acceleration of this trend, and it was an accelerated trend to begin with. So I think that's really quite an incredibly quick advance. And I don't think we have a scenario that's similar in terms of the pricing of European gas. So that's certainly something that's going to contribute to inflationary pressures. And then, of course, the Baltic Dry Index continues to push on the upside. So it has clearly broken out and is continuing to advance, and it's up almost 1,000% in the course of the last year. And one thing that I thought was interesting as well is that we've seen that in the ETF industry, when you get ETFs that disappear. So the Invesco Shipping ETF was around for a good long time, and then it was liquidated at the beginning of 2020. At the time, there were lots of shipping companies that were on the cusp of going bankrupt because shipping rates were so low, and then they had to contend with the IMO 2020 costs. And there was the real possibility that a lot of the ships were going to have to be junked. Well, then the pandemic struck. But before the pandemic struck, there just was nobody interested in investing in the sector. So the only remaining ETF was dissolved. And subsequently, we had a significant rebound in the fortunes of these companies because there was outsized demand for shipping goods around the world. There were fewer ships available to do it, and we've had this profound advance in the cost of shipping goods around the world, which is contributing to inflationary pressures. And I saw another example of shrinkflation over the weekend. We did a Costco run, bought some batteries, and the pack now only contains 48. The pack we just finished after a couple of years used to contain 64. So again, it's another example of this shrinkflation that's been going on in various stages for years. So when we think about inflationary pressures, companies are already starting to react. One thing though, that as the shipping sector starts to recover, well, then we now have a new ETF. Now, there's no money in it, but certainly there's been at least some enterprising firm that's decided that people may want to try and have a tangential play on this rise in shipping costs. So there's certainly evidence of inflation. And the big question isn't so much about whether this very high pace of inflation we've seen over the last 6 months and 9 months is going to persist, but rather at what level will the rate settle? When we then think about this in terms of countries that are still dealing with or having a difficult time dealing with the Delta variant, well, Australia is certainly among those because it hasn't had to deal with the original outbreak. So there is still a substantial proportion of the population hasn't had any form of natural immunity build up. But the stock market continues to rally because it's still unlikely that the Australian Central Bank is going to do very much to raise rates further or to further engage in tapering while this significant economic threat remains pressing. So then we can think about Australia in those terms, and then also New Zealand. And the New Zealand dollar is now firming from the region of the trend mean. It's been falling for most of the year, although not in a dynamic or a particularly dynamic manner. But there's certainly some evidence coming through now that it is beginning to firm. Now, when we think about Europe, well, there's obviously the threat of tapering, and we have a short-term overbought condition. But we have a lot of indices that look like this right now, and we've had substantial strengthening in Asian currencies and strength in their stock markets. So it's quite possible that with the technology sector bottoming in China, that's going to be positive for Asia generally, and Europe has the possibility of the fiscal limitations that have been holding it back for the last decade being reduced at least, or perhaps less well enforced might be the most likely scenario. So that's continuing to support the market. The Nasdaq was up in a dynamic manner yesterday, but it was a little bit softer in here today. But this continues to look like a very strong advance overall. And the most particular thing about the move yesterday was that it was being led higher by Apple. So Apple was in mildly negative territory today, but it is holding that breakout from this range. And this is a clear breakout from a well-defined range, and it suggests that there's still room for additional upside in here right now. And other shares like Microsoft and Amazon have also continued to firm. So the large cap companies are demonstrating clear evidence of enthusiasm at the prospect of no rise in interest rates anytime soon. And that's also one of the primary reasons why Bitcoin has been reasonably steady of late. Now, it was down $1,400 today, and it's still holding this range that's been forming for the last couple of weeks. Then we're at a point now where investors are starting to look at where potential is greatest. So Ethereum has pushed on to a new recovery high in here today, although it wasn't quite able to hold all of the advance. And then some of the smaller altcoins are doing substantially better. And Cardano is now, I think, up to the third largest and is at a new all-time high. So we're definitely seeing interest migrating within the cryptocurrency markets. And there is an extraordinary amount of interest right now in non-fungible tokens. So we're seeing this mob roaming from one speculative asset to the next. And this is extremely aggressive behavior, and it's emblematic of the kind of activity you see in a bubbly environment. But pointing out bubbly activity is really only half the job, because then I think it's much more important to identify, well, what could be the catalyst to eventually prick the bubble? And it's usually interest rates, it's usually monetary policy, or it's going to be something like high yield spreads or an inverted yield curve. And of all the things that we look at, well, they're just not firing. So it suggests that we're still in the inflation period of this bubble, and that valuations might become even more extreme before it eventually does pop. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.